Well, today we got Doubting Thomas. I love this story because I don't know about you, but it is just a relief. It is a huge, big, fat relief for me because it reminds me I am not the only one with questions and doubts. Those of you who know me well know that I can be mighty skeptical about a lot of things. Like many of you, I live very much in this world where in my life I look for proof and evidence and logic. And frankly, when people live outside of proof, evidence, and logic, it annoys me because it doesn't make sense. If you are normal, you are also going to have doubts and questions about faith and about Jesus' resurrection. And I don't know why this is, but somewhere along the line, some of us have gotten the idea that it is bad or shameful to have questions and doubts. Now, you may have seen the movie Doubt. It came out about 6-7 years ago. The movie stars Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep. And it's a story about a priest who's a pedophile. It's an awful story. Priest is a pedophile. And Meryl Streep plays a nun who catches him and ends up getting him to face consequences for it. Okay? At the end of the movie, the last scene, Meryl Streep, who's this much older nun, is talking to a much younger nun, maybe in her early 20s, and she's sobbing. She's just sobbing. She said, "Sister, I have doubts. I have doubts." As if it's some kind of unforgivable sin. Well, I would suggest, instead, that doubts, questions, and even skepticism can be a very good thing. You know, the old adage among the faithful is that certainty is the opposite of faith. Doubt is not the opposite of faith. Certainty is. It's like the bumper sticker I saw a while back that said, "Brains are like parachutes. They need to be open to work." The way it works is, if we are certain of what we know, if we know what we know, then we have just closed the door to anything new. Now, this is not a new habit. I'm putting on my history junkie hat. In 1871, there was a bill before the U.S. Congress to close the U.S. Patent Office because, following the Civil War, there were so many new inventions that had been made that some legislators said, you know what, everything that's ever going to be invented has already been invented, so let's just close the Patent Office. They were certain there couldn't possibly be anything new. So when it comes to this story about Thomas, we are tempted sometimes to vilify him as the one who should be ashamed of himself because he did not believe what the other 10 had seen. Let's fast forward this a couple thousand years. Put ourselves in his spot. What would you say if followers of an unemployed street preacher who was executed on trumped-up charges, if his followers claimed that he rose from the dead, and by the way, they were the only ones who saw him? It's stuff of the National Enquirer. If people say that today, we would think they are nuts. We would want to get them help. So why should we believe it? Because it's old? No. It's in the Bible, so it has to be true and we can't question it? No. If you are normal, you have probably had some pretty serious questions and doubts about what God's story for us is. That's one of the reassuring benefits of our story today. It is okay to have doubts. Jesus didn't yell at Thomas. He didn't shame him. Even one of the 11 remaining close insiders of Jesus did not believe that he rose. If one of the disciples had a hard time believing this story, then surely there is no shame in us having questions with it too. You see, doubt, questions, skepticism, these are not bad things. In fact, they are good things if we do not stop there. It is good to ask pivotal questions like, what do you mean Jesus saves? And how does that work? It is good to ask what in the world these stories that are 2,000 to 6,000 years old mean for us in our time. If we did not ask these questions, then our faith would be nothing more than an oblique history of an obscure, defeated Semitic nation. Questions and doubts are not a shameful thing. They are, in fact, the very things that lead us to grow in faith and trust, to begin to encounter and experience God's promise of new life for us in new ways. Now, chances are we are all aware that there are some believers around who are intent on trying to prove that this book, the Bible, is literally, scientifically, historically accurate and true in a 21st century kind of way. They want to lead us to make an artificial choice between things we've learned in the sciences in the last couple hundred years and a literal reading of this book. So they will lead us to choose between things like evolution or a strict 7-day creation, because they say the Bible says 7 days. Now, their sense is that either you accept everything literally without question, or you are not a true believer. This is nothing new. In the 17th century, Galileo was condemned by the church for his theory that the earth orbits the sun does not orbit the earth. They knew what they knew. They condemned him. The world we live in leads us to look for external empirical evidence, things that we can see and observe and measure. Now, the problem with a quest for literal quantifiable truth when it comes to matters of faith is that there isn't any. There is no proof there. And in fact, looking for that kind of proof leads us to put our attention on the wrong thing. Now, Thomas received physical proof that Jesus lives. We don't. But that does not mean that we are cheated. Typically, in this world, the absence of quantifiable proof leads us to conclude that whatever we're trying to prove is not real. But what if the place for us to look for proof is not outside? What if the place we need to look for proof is within? Inside of us, in our experience, in the change, the transformation, the redemption that happens in us. See, our proof is not about sticking fingers in holes or sticking our hand in a gash in Jesus' side today. Today, our proof is about feeling and experiencing how Jesus comes to us now. It's not just about how Jesus was resurrected. It is about how you and I have been brought to new life and resurrected now. See, the story of our faith does not end with resurrection. It starts there. The story of our faith does not end with the last chapter of this book before we get into the maps. They're there. Okay. It begins there. It starts there. Our faith is simply not going to make any sense unless we live it. If we limit our faith to things we can explain, things we can understand, we end up with a hollow, empty thing because proof has no room for love, compassion, or forgiveness. It just cares about data. So the question is not how we will get the kind of evidence and proof that Thomas received. The question for us is, how does God's promise make a difference for you now? How does God's grace touch your life? How does it set you free? How does it make you new? Now, it's important to remember that it was Jesus' suffering, sacrifice, and death that saves us, not his resurrection. It was Good Friday, not Easter. Now, of course, in our world that's focused on glory, winning, and success, we don't like to hear the suffering part. Case in point, attendance here Good Friday, about 130. Easter Sunday, a little bigger. We like the glory part. We like the victory. But see, that's the end That's not the start of the journey. Resurrection is where we are led after our suffering and sacrifice. And suffering and sacrifice, by the way, is not just the hard part of life. It is the intentional ways that we choose to care for the weak and forgotten, the despised and the blamed, the imprisoned and the sick, the ways we care for those who reject us and might even hate us. That is sacrifice. See, Jesus said if we want to live with Him, we need to take up our crosses, deny ourselves, and die with Him. He did not say, hang out, wait in the cheap seats, and then jump into the victory parade after I've done all the hard work. He didn't say, just stick your fingers in the holes and everything will be okay. No, Jesus calls us into a journey where we get to continue experiencing new life in every way we need it. Jesus leads us to experience what God's love is like when we share it with others, when we feed the hungry, when we care for the lost and forgotten, when we forgive those who are very, very hard to forgive, when we love those who are very hard to love, when we go after and seek out those who are lost, when we care for those who are blamed, those who are vilified, those who are called enemies. Now here's the irony. If we want to see Jesus today, He already told us where to look. Among those in need. This is the same Jesus who said, when you do this to the least of these, you have done this to me. When you feed the hungry, when you give water to the thirsty, when you clothe the naked, when we care for the poor, when we do, we have met Jesus again. And that is where we see holes in their lives. And as we seek to fill those holes, we find out that some of the holes in our lives begin to be healed as well. So go ahead. Bring all the skepticism, questions, and doubts you want. Jesus welcomes them. But do not stop at looking for physical proof. Look instead for how Jesus lives now in you, in acts of love, sacrifice, generosity, helping people who feel like they've lost their lives, get them back. Live the story. Show what it means to be forgiven, loved without condition, and set free. And then we will have all the proof we need.